Hello and welcome to Open Sources Guelph Beat, a shorter Open Sources that's just the Guelph parts. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Scotty Hertz and I set ourselves the goal earlier this year to host every member of City Council on Open Sources for a half-hour chat. One of our most recent gets is not just a city councilor, but a practicing singer-songwriter currently touring to promote his latest album called Sunny Jim. If the process of elimination isn't easy enough for you, we are, of course, talking about War II Councillor James Gordon. Gordon is another councillor enjoying his first term in office, inheriting a seat in War II from Ian Finlay in 2014. Gordon has a long history of community involvement in Guelph as a co-founder of the Hillside Festival, the Guelph Civic League, and Wellington Water Watchers, and after two attempts to represent Guelph at Queen's Park, he made his political ambitions a reality in 2014 when the people of War II handily elected him one of its two city councillors. Making the transition from activist to politician is one of the items we discussed with Gordon when he appeared on Open Sources a few weeks ago, and riding the coattails of his latest album release, we also talked about how it feels to be working two jobs, promoting his music, and working for the people of War II. There were also several issues in development at council at the time of Gordon's appearance, the recently announced redevelopment of the Homewood property being one, the debate over a living wage at committee, the struggle to make the lack of peak service with transit manageable, and Gordon's quest to make sure council recognizes Guelph's initial citizens before the start of every meeting. So with all that in mind, let's head back to July 7th. That was when we hosted Sunny Jim, Councillor James Gordon, on Open Sources Guelph.
We have a folk roots blues chart.
We do.
Wow.
And it's not often that we have the person in the studio that is the same. It's almost like a music show for a brief
period. Yeah. It's like the one time we have a music show.
And somebody's on the charts, too. So there's
really. Yeah, he's bestseller.
Here we go.
So obviously, we're talking about James Gordon, War II counselor for the city of Guelph. James, welcome back to CFRU.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
You are always welcome here, of course, because this is where your CDs are.
That's it. I saw them on the shelf out there.
That's right.
He counted them.
So you wanted to make sure if there was one missing.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, just to make sure.
Replace.
Let's talk about music for a minute because, technically, council is a part-time job, which obviously forces you to make your musical career a part-time job. So how has balancing two part-time jobs been lately?
People say, James, how do you balance it? And I think my answer is, I don't. Why do you think I'm balancing it? It's chaos. Yeah.
Some honesty in practice there. That's great.
Well, it's changed my touring habits, of course, because I used to go out if I was on tour, I'd go out for 6 weeks or something. But now I'm mostly Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm flying more, which is bad for my carbon karma. But it's actually at a time in the music business when it's in a real state of flux, too. And there's not as much work for old guys like me out there anyway. So I'm pleased. On the days that it feels like I am balancing it, it feels like an interesting combination that I'm trying to stay up for the challenge.
But it's not like you... The two worlds are sort of so distant because you sing a lot about social justice matters, and it's political to an extent.
Yeah, and I think it was actually Charlie Angus and Jack Layton that got me into this politics game, saying, James, it's not that different a gig. You know, you don't have a guitar in your hand, but you have to relate to people. You have to be responsive to them. You have to try to find a way to communicate that resonates with them. And I'm finding a lot of similarities, actually.
That's a good segue, because I was going to ask you, you ran for political office twice, ran for council. Again, you're no stranger to politics and activism, but I mean, now you are on an actual decision-making
body. Right.
So is it everything you hoped it would be?
Everything I hoped and less. No.
You're going to be in the Mercury tomorrow.
Actually, cool. I think that the interesting thing is I've spent all too many years standing outside city halls and legislatures with placards and being protesting guy. So I'm only doing this because I thought, well, could I make a difference being on the inside? And I think that it's hard to let go of the rah, 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 let's change this, and because it's a slower process from the inside. But I think working on the outside so much has brought a perspective to that inside stuff that
right.
I think it's enabling me. I'm learning how to work within the system and get some stuff done.
Is it interesting wearing the shoes on the other foot, you know, where you would stand out in front of those places and say, like, why can't you get this done? And now you know why that can't get done.
I know, and that's been a humbling experience a little bit. And I think I think riding that line has been helpful because having been there and now having been where I am now, I can empathize with the ones on the outside shaking their banners. But I also can have a cautionary thing too. Well, maybe standing out there and yelling isn't the most effective way to get something done. By the same token, I get frustrated a lot when sitting around a horseshoe sometimes doesn't feel like we're getting anything done. So somehow I'm just picking up tools along the way.
Well, speaking of tools, no.
The tool library. That's a good
That is a good idea. Open house coming up on next Saturday, I believe.
I think, yeah.
I don't want to actually talk about the tool library. Not that it's not a good service or anything. Yeah. There was something that obviously came out of corporate services this week.
Oh, yeah.
Big issue that got a lot of people talking about living wage.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware of this, but there are apparently 27 people at the waste recycling plant who aren't making or are differently paid than everyone else.
That's right. In fact, that's why I didn't expect it to be as much of an issue as it was when it came to the committee, because what our goal was and the motion that was presented was to become an official living wage city.
Mm-hmm.
And there are different levels of that, but the basic one is when all your full-time employees are making a living wage.
Right.
We were only 27 employees shy of that, and they are all the sorters out at the waste plant.
Right.
But they were only, I think, 8 or 10 cents an hour shy of it.
Right.
So it would have actually only cost us $5,000 to bring them up to there, so that we were hoping that that would send a message, that commitment that we're making, that would inspire other corporations and communities to get on board, because we've seen the economic value to a community in it. But it turned out it wasn't really about the money at all. It became very ideological, very political, and I was pretty surprised by the results.
Is it because they are on contract?
They're not on contract. They actually are union members.
Okay.
It just turns out that the union contract is up in 2019.
Right.
But I think it's ironic that it's a garbage place because they're at the bottom of the heap in some ways.
So they're just in a different band of.
Yeah. Okay. So the hope would be that next time it came up for a union contract negotiation, that the city could say, you know what, we're committed to making them giving them a living wage. There's different levels of living wage, too, depending on whether there's a benefit package to it. So it just didn't, I was surprised to know that we were that close and that all the employees, we have a lot of part-time employees, and that would be another level of commitment that we know would take a while to get to. But I was disappointed and surprised that we couldn't make that just that one symbolic gesture anyway.
It seems to be happening a lot that there's something perhaps simple comes up at council and there's an ideological bend. And a lot of people in the community talk about it. That it seems that we can't work things out because the perception of giving 27 people $5,000 more per year affects bona fides concerning, people wanting to be fiscally reserved.
Yeah, and I think that's where, I think we've talked about this before, Adam, where I find the dissonance on council I didn't think it was that ideological. I thought it was more around short-term versus long-term thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So in the short term, you might say, well, we don't want to spend that money to raise them up to the living wage now because these are tough times.
Mm-hmm.
But the long-term vision is do that. It means they're going to be paying more taxes, those people. They're going to be purchasing more local products. They're going to have more loyalty towards their employer. They're going to be healthier. There's so many. We've just seen so many best practices around the economic value you get for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that takes a bit of a long-term vision, which I'm not sure is there on the council on some days, like the day we had that committee meeting. It just wasn't there. And I was surprised when, I mean, the ideology comes out. The mayor, in fact, to his credit, was totally honest when he said, you know, I'm a free market kind of a guy. This doesn't fit that. And I would disagree. And he also said, that I think now legendary comment, just even though it's just a few days ago, we'll say, why is it always these lefties that make it a moral, ethical issue?
He actually said that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think that I thought that was an insult to righties, because shouldn't decisions being made from the business community have a moral, ethical aspect right. to it as well? So I was very surprised to hear that, and yet it guides us. And again, I talk about short and long-term vision, but there's a big picture thing too, is I think if there's a reticence about going to some of those places like that living wage, it's because there's also in the back of some councillors and maybe the mayor's mind is, well, could some of these services we save by privatizing them?
Mm.
And I know that's been talked about. So it wouldn't be any advantage then. Let's unload that instead of upgrading it. So that's a big issue on itself.
The idea that perhaps you don't want to do anything to enhance it when it could be gone.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, in a year or two.
Yeah.
I want to talk about another thing that's sort of a hot topic, transit.
Yeah.
The Guelph Transit, after a council decision last week, added buses to certain routes. I know that everyone around the horseshoe has gotten an earful over the last several
For
weeks.
For sure.
And I'm wondering, and it's almost 1 week since we've got those extra buses added. And is your inbox a little lighter these days, or are people still?
I think it is, although the inbox has changed its tone now. And that we see it's why. The tone now is, why the hell did we do this in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
instead of, hey, I can't get to my bus on time. So now they're saying, okay, we've eased the pressure a little bit, but how did we get this pressure in the first place? What was the decision-making mechanism that allowed us to do that? And frankly, I think that it was one of council's biggest mistakes at budget time. It wasn't going to cost us the money that we saved to trim those routes for the summer schedule was pretty insignificant compared to how much it disrupted a lot of people's lives.
And I always come down to, speaking of free market, just if you go to the Guelph Transit Facebook page and the rating, it's a business page, so which means people can rate it.
Oh,
right?
Okay, sure.
So if you look at the rating, it's like, I think the last time I looked last week, it was 1.7 out of 5 stars.
Check that out.
Yeah, if you want to make the business case, what's more business than user feedback or customer feedback?
Oh, for sure. And
which is always horrible in the case of transit.
And in fact, with transit, why cutting back services is, to me, the opposite of what we should be doing. Anything that we can do to boost ridership, the main ways to do that is with efficiency, reliability, and frequency. So if it looks to someone like, hey, that's pretty darn easy to take that bus and it gets me where I want to go on time, I'm not going to get in an Uber cab. I'm not going to get in my car. And the more people that find that there an appetite for that, then when our ridership goes up, we save in a lot of other ways too. And again, that goes back to the short-term thinking. And I think one of the things we need to address in the fall around transit is the ratio between how much should transit really pay for itself through fares.
Right.
I think we owe it to our community to shift that so that it's not necessarily a subsidy. It's investing in our transit system so that it fulfills a community need.
Yeah, and I think that's a broader discussion that needs to take place because we get caught in this. I mean, it seems like as an observer, we're caught in a nickel and diming sort of thing where some stuff in government is going to be invariably be a loss leader, and I think transit is something like that.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I also wanted to talk about what's going on, something big that's going on in your ward, the Homewood redevelopment.
Yeah.
And I find it fascinating because Homewood is something, I think everybody knows Homewood.
Sure.
In Guelph. Very few of us have the need to go or
right.
to visit someone. But, I mean, it's this huge institution in the city.
Yeah.
So what's this redevelopment of the site?
I was just that they had an open house just 10 days ago or mm-hmm. so, and the confusing part is that it is a major redevelopment. They want to add like a six-story complex to the side and really, really make it the centerpiece. There are now the same company, the Schlegels, that own it have mm-hmm. 13 of them all around the country now. So this would be sort of their headquarters. However, the confusion in the community is that what they've decided to do to help fund this development is to sever the property to give them some remortgaging power. Hmm. And that severance is basically the wilderness part of the property. It's the largest woodlot in the city limits,
yeah,
as far as I know. And it's historical value. And they say, well, but we're not going to do anything with it. We're just going to sever it. But there's a level of trust in the community around that. Well, so if you're not going to do anything with it, why are you severing it? And I think there's still confusion, and I think we need to sort that out. Just because the Schlegels say we won't do it, I think we need somehow an assurance. What I'd love to see, I mean, if it's severed, it would be open for a future council that maybe had a different mind frame of saying, well, look, it's sitting there. There's an opportunity for development. We'll make a lot more tax dollars on it that
right.
way. But it'd be lovely, and I don't think it'll happen, but if the city ended up owning it, you know, or it was given in a trust, I think there's a lot of reasons why that should be maintained as an urban forest.
Mm-hmm. This, I'd happen to be in the hospital, and they seem to be clearing a bunch of trees out.
Yeah.
Was that sort of pre-planned, or is it, I guess it's private property?
That's a flag. I've been getting a lot of calls about
that. A lot of sawdust
that.
Over there.
Yeah, and what they say is that they're doing woodlot management.
Right.
And yet it looks like there's more trees that being cut that would just demonstrate that.
It's going to be noticeable. My mind goes up on the seventh floor, so you can look over and see. But
so I have people quite concerned about that.
Yeah.
So they want to sever the land with the actual facility on from the land that has the natural...
That's right. It actually includes, the severed part would include Riversleigh, the historic home, the old Goldie mansion there,
right.
too. So it's kind of the south section of it.
And I've actually seen that house. It was a friend of mine did Fall of the House of Usher, play, and he used that as a model, and I went down and shot it for him, the outside of it.
Interesting. Yeah, it's a fabulous
With
spot.
A camera.
Okay, yeah.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, just to be, yeah. I was, yeah. So but it's beautiful grounds.
Oh, for sure.
And I think.
And I think that the other concern from a Ward 2 standpoint is that will this increase development, what will that do to the actual traffic in the neighborhood? Delhi Street itself, is it built for that? Because we've already got the hospital there. Can it handle it while still maintaining its integrity? They're talking about knocking down the nurse's residence across the street and making that a parking lot. Mm. And while it doesn't seem to be qualified as a designated historically, I think that there's a heritage streetscape there to bear in mind, too. Like, how would that change just the feel and the look of the street? That's what I'm hearing from the neighbors.
Interesting. Before we wrap up, I wanted to touch on, too, I'm mistaken, but it seems like you're taking point on making sure that the First Nations people get recognized at the beginning of every council, the Attawateron peoples, that we tip our hat at the beginning of every council meeting to them.
Yeah.
It seems like such an obvious thing.
I know. Well, Adam, I thought it was too. So it wasn't quite happening. So that's when it shouldn't just happen as a matter of course, but
right.
to make it official protocol was the motion that I brought forward,
yeah.
and it passed unanimously. It was great to hear. So now it means, yes, it'll be done. And I have to say, it's been very rewarding to find out what seems like a very simple gesture has meant a lot to our Indigenous community here.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bigger community than you might think.
Yeah.
And that's something we learn all the time. When is that going to go into effect? Because I know there's wording issues.
Yeah, so it's back to staff to consult with elders in the community to find the wording. And I wish I could say that was an easy thing, but there's, we have the Attawandran people, but there was a Anishinaabe, Haudenosaunee, who considered this part of their heritage as well, too.
The Mississaugas,
yeah,
inroads in here.
That's
too.
Right. So, do you end up just saying we're on First Nations land, or how do you do it? So, I think that there's going to be a consultation process, and whenever we get through that, we'll be ready to rock.
Okay, because that was kind of from my mom, too, who loved this idea. But
oh, yeah.
she was like, well, what kind of wording do we
need?
It seems pretty straightforward. I wanted to ask you about this, too. I'm seeing signs up around that say, are there lead in your pipes?
Oh, yeah.
To tell you to call the city of Guelph if you want to find out. And it's sort of funny seeing these signs out of context just along the streets.
Right.
And I'm sure I'm not alone in wondering.
Don't panic.
Is it time to panic?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Yes. Let's run screaming into the street. Now, actually, what I know about it is that they are targeting neighborhoods that have ancient infrastructure and might have lead pipes, and it's a great service that they're offering. To be honest, I got calls of confusion because those signs look like it's a business.
Yeah.
Right? Like, are they trying to sell me something? But it's actually generated by the city, and they'll, to ease your panic, they will investigate for you, and if they find it, they'll tell you what to do about it. So not a lot of the pipes now that come from the main hookup water into the houses haven't, but there still are some, and it's a health concern for sure.
It's funny you mentioned, like, is it a business? Because that was my first thought.
Oh, yeah.
And it has the City of Guelph logo on the side in white.
Yeah.
But you associate City of Guelph stuff. And maybe that's just great branding with the light green and the light blue color.
Yeah. And I was worried people, the guy's going to go around with clipboards and say, hey, can we look at your lead pipes? And people saying, no, I don't think so.
Yeah. There's a lot of,
It kind of looks like an election sign, too.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, lead, 2017. Yeah. lead out. In 2017.
Oh, I like it. Yeah.
Before we wrap up, we were talking that it's the summertime and it's good touring time, but I think it's also a good time to think about what's coming up in the fall and what council's going to do when September comes around again. So what's on your radar?
Well, we will be shifting in some way to this new council as a whole,
mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious to see how that works. I think I'm optimistic. That, for instance, that vote about living wage mm-hmm. would have been a very different vote if every councillor had a vote on it at the committee.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll be gearing up towards budget season. And I know that I'm starting now. I know a lot of the other councillors are, just to gauge the community. And I'd like to make sure we have a total cultural shift around the budget towards offering the best value for your tax dollars, not the an artificial low number that means we will have to cut bus service and things like that. So what's going to address the well-being of this community while still keeping it affordable? And that's the balance.
Oh, and people are sort of warming up for that.
Yes,
I did notice on your blogs, people posting like, I can't pay higher taxes.
Yeah.
And I mean, how do you respond to that? It's such a visceral thing. Like, I'm not sure what this woman's situation is. It does sound like she's on a fixed income, but
sure.
When I hear that, it's just like, well, what do you do? What do you say?
Yeah. Well, actually, it's our new CAO has a line that he fed me that I started to use, where if they're grumbling about their property taxes, and they have a right to, it's hard to pay your property taxes. Say, well, how much have they gone up in the last 10 years? And they'll tell you, and they say, well, how much has the value of your home gone up in 10 years? And how much has your cost of your groceries gone up? And everything's gone up. So why should that one thing not go up? And sometimes that gives them a pause. And sometimes I'll say, okay, if we're feeling a will in the city to freeze the taxes, what are you willing to give up for it? But there's a trap in there, because you'd be surprised at what some people say they'd give up.
Like the buses.
Yeah, like the buses. Like the library. Like, I don't go to the park, so why do you keep the parks? Why do you have people in the parks? Yeah. So it is, you get surprises that way. So it's not an easy answer, but you have to, just like we talked, we're wrapping around the conversation, just like the music business, you got to listen to people. You have to try to reflect back what you're hearing from them, but I'll offer them alternatives. Instead of saying, I'm sorry, I'm raising your taxes, that's not what they want to hear. You want to say, here's why it probably can't stay at a zero, but here's what we're trying to do to keep it affordable and yet still meet the needs, especially around our infrastructure and just keeping that enviable quality of life that we've got in the city going.
Well, I love it when we end things full circle.
Hey, all right. Nice
James,
work.
Where can people get in touch with you?
Well, you can go to my city, james.gordon@guelph.ca, or you can, if it's a show business thing, I have a website, jamesgordon.ca. I also have a Ward 2 blog, and I would love it. I'd like to expand that more. And you can come out Thursday mornings to visit me.
Yes.
Where have you been? Where have you been?
I've been working.
Okay.
I'm a writer. You want me to get up at 8 a.m.?
Breezy Corners breakfast every Thursday morning. It's become a little bit of an incubator for ideas. And then we get...
Nice. It's huge.
Yeah. It's getting bigger every week. This morning we had to get an extra couple tables going. And
amazing.
It's a very cool thing. So that's a way to keep in touch with those constituents.
Love to go on a tour. Breakfast tour.
We'll come one of these mornings.
All right.
And once again, that was Ward 2 Councillor James Gordon. You can get in touch with him at 519-822-1260, extension 2504, or by email at james.gordon@guelph.ca. You can also follow his blog at ward2guelph.wordpress.com, his Facebook page at facebook.com/James S. Gordon, or on Twitter at @ThatJamesGordon. You can also buy his new album, Sunny Jim, at wherever you find music, either digitally or physically. And that's all for this edition of Open Source's Guelph Beat. Remember, we are airing these every Wednesday through August, so stay tuned for the final one next Wednesday. That is the interview with Ward 6 Councillor Mark McKinnon. And of course, you can listen to Open Source's Guelph live every Thursday at 5 p.m., on CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. If you should happen to miss an episode, you can download the podcast version every Monday. The host for the Open Sources Guelph podcast is Podbean. Go to guelphpoliticast.podbean.com to listen to past episodes, and while you're there, you can also listen to the Guelph Politicast. You can interact with Open Sources Guelph through our website at opensourcesguelph.com or through Facebook at Open Sources Newswire, or you can follow us on Twitter at @OS_Guelph. You can connect with Scotty at Scotty Hertz on Facebook and Twitter, and read his personal blog at spannerbook.wordpress.com. And you can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com, or reach me through Twitter at @AdamADonaldson. And of course, there is also the Guelph Politico Facebook page, which you can find at facebook.com/PoliticoGuelph. And for all the latest political news, check out guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca. And remember that the Guelph Politicast will be back here at the end of the week. And until then, see you next time.